radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Time, but space is a place that only a human being locates. Where there's so much information to take, there you enter an entirely new place. Once you get on the internet, become World Wide Web.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to stay tuned for interesting interviews, news you can use, and programming designed with you in mind. Free your mind, the rest will follow, right here on the Cyberspace Sanctuary, on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul.
Cyberspace is the place. Cyberspace is the place.
Mm-hmm. myself the man. A human being so true, he could live like a king, 'cause he knew the real pleasure in life. Be unafraid and free. If there was ever a man who was generous, gracious, and good, that was my dad, the man.
Listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. Stay tuned. Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, here on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton. We started off the program with a message in the music from Leon Thomas, his vocal rendition of Horace Silver's Song for My Father, which sets the stage for today's program featuring our guest, Richard Lundy, who's the founder of the Kemet Institute in Columbus, Ohio. It's a mentoring and after-school program for African-American males ages 11 through 15. He's also the founder of the annual Father and Son Celebration. This year marks their 17th annual Father-Son Celebration. And he's a stalwart in advocating that fathers take responsibility for their children to reconnect and be a major influence and major part in their lives. Following these upcoming messages, we'll speak with our guest, Richard Lundy. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
We'd like to welcome everybody checking in from Real Media Player, from Windows Media Player, from iTunes. We want to encourage everyone to log into our website, which is blakeradio.com, and become familiar with how you can access our broadcast directly from our website. And vice versa, those of you who check in directly from the Blake Radio Network, become familiar with how you can also access us through Real Media Player, through Windows Media Player, and iTunes by logging into their radio tuner guides and doing a search for us in the talk radio genre. You're listening to Rainbow Soul, talk radio at its best.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Junius Ricardo Stanton here with some truly great news. The Blake Radio Network has officially released the new Rainbow Soul iPhone and Android apps worldwide. Now, there's also an HTML version for all other cell phones. The apps can be accessed from www.blakeradio.com on the Rainbow Soul page or directly from the iPhone App Store or Android Market. These apps will allow you to lock in exclusively to the Rainbow Soul broadcast with the touch of a button. These acquisitions complete the development and release of all the apps for the Blake Radio Network family of channels, which includes Rainbow Soul, the Alt Talk channel, and Music Massage, an eclectic mix of R&B, jazz, soul, and reggae slow jams for your listening edification and entertainment. So take full advantage of this opportunity for connectivity and mobility by downloading your respective app from your source. Continue listening to the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul and Music Massage.
Patience, Professor Griff. You're listening to Junior Ricardo Stanton. Straight up, we're teaching you all those things you need to know from the neck up, all right? We're definitely doing a checkup from the neck up. This is Professor Griff from Public Enemy, the ex-minister. I'm out. Peace.
Our guest today is Richard Lundy, who's the founder of the Kemet Institute. He's also the founder of the annual Father-Son Celebration in Columbus, Ohio. He's an educator. He is a dynamic leader in the movement to get African-American males to become responsible fathers and to reconnect with their children. It's a pleasure to welcome him. He's also a co-host on a internet radio program in his city. So welcome, brother. How are you?
I'm just fine this morning, good brother. How are you today?
I'm great. I'm great. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Share
okay.
Your personal and professional background with us.
Okay. I guess I would say, first and foremost, I'm an educator. Been that all my life. I do life coaching for fathers and sons. And as you had mentioned, I founded the annual Father and Son Celebration. My academic background is I attended the Ohio State University many, many years ago and have an advanced degree from that institution. Worked in higher education for about 25 plus years. Some of the institutions I worked at are Antioch College here in Ohio and one of the oldest historical black colleges in the country, Wilberforce University here in Ohio. And then I motored on out to California, and I worked at one of the Cal State Universities in Hayward, California. Also, the National Hispanic University. If you've ever heard of that, there's a National Hispanic University in California, and I was the director of admissions there. And then I worked at the University of the Pacific, taught black studies there. So been around dealing with males pretty much all my life. I have two sons, 14 nephews, so I consider myself somewhat of an expert dealing with African-American males.
Now, what prompted you to return to Columbus?
Well, what prompted me to Columbus were several things, but the priority was for me, I had, as a teenager, I had impregnated a young lady right out of high school, had a child, and out of fear and lack of information, I decided to bail out and join the service. And so I joined the military. I was blessed to have gone to California. I stayed out there after I got out of the service, but I realized that I had some responsibilities and obligations to my son. And I wanted to come back to Columbus to reconnect with my son.
Oh, okay. Now, you had both your sons were in Columbus?
Yes.
Okay. So how was that? I mean, was that after a lengthy period? You know, say, were you in the service like 4 years, 3 years,
yeah.
6 years?
I think probably about my third year. I had a difficult time adjusting to the military. And so probably in my third year, when I finally was adjusted and teetotaling to make sure I didn't get dishonorably discharged, I began to think about my son, and I wanted to do what I could do, so I began to try to reach out to him. What I did was I identified some elders, some mentors, and I suggest this to young guys all the time. I got some mentors, and they told me that, you know, you're thousands of miles away, but these are some of the things that you can do. Some of the things that I was suggested to do was I could write them, I could send them cards other than just birthday and holiday cards, and I could telephone them, you know. And so I began to reach out to my sons. I sent them letters, long letters. As a matter of fact, we still have some of the letters that we exchanged early on in their lives. And I kept in contact with them. When I came back to Columbus, I would travel back every 2 years or so. I would pick them up and visit with them and introduce them to my family, that kind of thing. So I did that throughout the time, but it was still the long distance, and I wasn't there for the football games, and I wasn't there for the banquets and all of those kinds of things. So I knew that I still had work to do.
Now,
and so that was what was really the impetus to get me to come back.
Hmm. Now, how did they receive you? Was it something like, oh, wow, my dad is in the service and I have a relationship with him? Or was it somewhat distant?
It was very distant. The oldest one was very independent. He felt that he didn't need me. He was doing okay. He played sports. He was good in sports, that kind of thing. And the other one was very bitter. He was just very angry and very bitter. And so it was two different kinds, distinct kinds of personalities that I had to deal with. And I'm happy to say today we have a wonderful relationship. So, I what I went through was worth it. I suggest that to all men, that it's worth it. Whatever the rejection that you're going to get, because you're going to get that. Again, you're the one, the man is the one that is the adult. The child comes here totally innocent. And it's the responsibility of us men to go back and reclaim our children if we have them. And for some unknown reason, we were stupid and walked away from our responsibility.
One of the things that you've done is you've commenced, and you've been doing it for some time, giving workshops to single mothers about raising black boys. So how did that come about?
Again, as you said, I was the youngest of five. I had four sisters, and you can imagine what that was like growing up in the inner city with no brothers and four sisters, all of them very attractive. But all of my sisters had children out of wedlock, and I saw them go through the pain and the suffering that that women go through when they had children out of wedlock. I saw them go through the embarrassment, how their friends desert them, how the men walk away from them and leave them with the responsibility. So I end up sort of almost being the surrogate father to all of my nephews. And in doing so, as I got older, I thought about it. I said, wow, you know, maybe I can help some women by sharing with them a male perspective on things that need to be talked about in raising boys. And so when I lived in California, I started doing workshops, and I did them through the community colleges. And surprisingly to me, the audience was predominantly white females. And so when I came back to Columbus, I started to do this, and the audience then was predominantly black females. And so I was more happy with that. And it's been interesting, the difference in terms of dealing with the people. Oftentimes in doing these workshops, the sisters get very upset with me because they personalize what I'm talking about and they attack me, you know, and I have to make it clear that it's a workshop about single women raising boys, and all I'm doing is sharing a different perspective, you know. So, I mean, I enjoy doing it. It's been very well received, and the sisters really appreciate it.
Well, you've had personal experience dealing with your son's mother.
So absolutely.
I was going to ask you, how was that relationship, and what things from that relationship have you been able to incorporate in your workshops for the single women?
Some of the things I had, I have three children with three mothers. I have two boys and a daughter. And the age gaps are big, and so there's that different dynamics. But with the three different mothers, I went for everything from the fatal attraction type relationship to the baby mama drama relationship to one that was amenable, where we were able to get along and whatever. That was with my oldest son. The ones after that, it was touch and go, and so with the experiences that I acquired in doing that, going through that whole court system, going through that child support system, you know, I'm able to bring some of that out in those workshops to talk to women about ways to engage the father and get them involved with their children that doesn't warrant all of the drama, you know, to talk to them about, you know, like a lot of women feel that they get left holding the bag, and I try to assure them that the man that walks away from his child, I guarantee you, he's dealing with that, whether it looks like it or not. He might look like he's doing okay, but he's not doing okay because it's either wearing him down through his guilt and his shame, or he's just having bad luck. Because you know, I don't think that the universe is fond of that, where you bring a child into the world and you walk away from that responsibility. I just think that you're going to have bad karma.
Yeah. I mean, because we're the conduit for the universe to perpetuate itself in human form. So, that's there's no question about that.
Right.
But a lot of times, women are so angry and bitter that it's hard for a brother to establish a relationship, and they become a blockage to the male reconnecting or reestablishing with the child. So do you address that in the workshop? And if so, what type of response do you get from women who just don't want to let go?
Right. Well, basically, when I'm addressing that issue, I talk about my own experience, and I talk about the difference in terms of my adult sons, you know, where they are today, where they are now, how I saw it impact my nephews. When women have that bitterness and anger towards the father, what that does is it forces the boy into a situation where he has to choose. And what we're naturally going to do is we're going to always lean toward our mother. We're going to choose our mother. That's the one that nurtures us, the one that feeds us and takes care of us. And so what we do is then we put our mothers on a pedestal, and we exclude them from any responsibility for my father and them not being together, when we don't know both sides of the story.
Right.
So I talk to the women about, you know, if you badmouth your father, your child's father, if you put him down, constantly put him down, then what you're doing is you're turning him against his father. And what that does then is it creates problems for the boy and his growth and development. See, I mean, when I look at, I theorized this before, people aren't too fond of it, but if you have a car and the car has four cylinders, if two of those cylinders are not working, the car is not going to work well.
Right.
If you have a child and you have just a mother, you had a father, you know, and the father contributed to your DNA just like your mother did. And so when you ignore hate or whatever your father, you're hating a part of yourself. And
right.
So those are some of the things that I try to touch on to get the women to realize that. And the other thing is that a lot of times, because boys can't, you're never going to really, you get to a certain age, you begin to look at your mother a little more objectively. But for a long time, you put your mother on that pedestal, so she's never done anything wrong. Okay, but what happens then is because you have so much anger and bitterness towards your father, which you don't know anything about, that the way it manifests sometimes is you have boys that are often running around angry, and they don't really know why they're angry. And they're mad because they don't have no outlet. They have no frustration. I had a youngster that I was working with. Both his parents were crack addicts, and they both deserted him. You know, so he was raised with his grandmother. This young man was the angriest young. I started working with him when he was 3 years old, and I've seen today he's 19. And he's just as angry as he was when he was three. Mm-hmm. You can't, you know, that it goes deep-seated with boys. What boys do is they suck it up. You know, we just suck it up and rationalize, oh, it don't bother me. It does. Every boy in the deep seeds of his heart wants a relationship with his father.
Right. And oftentimes I think the opposite sex parent is crucial, because for boys or males, that's where they get the first inkling of what a female is like, and for the young girls, that's where they get an inkling of what a male is like. So if there's trauma or there's abandonment, that skewers their perspective on relationships and can have a lifelong deleterious effect on them as they navigate life and try to establish relationships and things like that.
Absolutely. You're hitting the nail dead on the head, because I have a daughter, and when I left California, she was probably 11 years old when I left the state. And during that period of time, I wasn't able to see her. Her mother wouldn't honor the visitation rights. When I would call her, she wouldn't let me talk to her. And I tried to explain to her that what you're doing is creating a problem for our daughter that you will see manifest when she gets in her 20s. And my daughter is in her, she just turned 30, and it's exactly what it is. What happens then is the daughter then begins to take a look at me, and she says, okay, my mother's told me all these years my dad was this, that, and the other. Well, she's mature enough to say, well, he doesn't seem that way to me. Okay, so then she begins to question the mother. And so then the mother then will, in trying to defend her position, will sometimes not be truthful. And so what happens then, the kid is torn. So when they are at a point where they need their parents, my daughter doesn't want to come to me because she don't want to take me over her mother because her mother raised her, okay? But she don't want to come to her mother because she knows her mother don't always tell the truth. So there she is now. She's in New York. Her mother's in California. I'm in Ohio. She's in New York. And she has questions about men that she has nobody to talk to about it. Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Not only
so,
that.
You know, you can't taint your child against the other person. You can be, you don't put the kid in it. You know, if you're mad at the other person, that's fine, but don't put the child in it, because when you put the child in it, as you said, and I think and you said it better than I could have said it, it has an effect on them long into their lives. I've seen it with all of my nephews.
Yeah, and that's when we're not aware, and so a lot of the drama, a lot of the animosity, a lot of the family secrets, the lies that are told, the finger pointing, they have a major impact on the child. And for a female, a lot of times they will embark on a search for their father.
Yes.
And if they, maybe they heard good things about their father, they'll look for that in their search. If they know nothing, if they're totally ignorant, it's almost like they're caught out there in a storm and they can't navigate on the seas because they have no bearing. They have no compass. They have no model to go by.
Yeah, and another piece of that is when they have no model to go by, there's a void, okay? There's a void. And so what they're doing is every male that they come in contact with, they're really looking for their father.
Right.
Well, they get with a guy. If there's a guy, and you know how we are as young men, you know, we know how to say the right stuff, you know, to make them think we love them and we care and whatever. So that's what they're really looking for. So they get confused. They're looking for, not only are they seeing this cute boy and they say, oh, he's cute and I like to date him, but they're also leaning toward, they feel that void being filled by this male of not having a father. So if they're young and impressionable, you know, they get in there and this guy, he comes across as the big man, whatever. They get confused. And so they end up staying in a relationship with this person, not so much because they love this person or whatever, but because it fills that void for them.
Right. And that's how a lot of females get caught up in negative situations. A lot of times, and because females develop quicker and faster than males, they tend to look for older until we get close, and I maintain we never catch up, but you know.
I agree with that.
But a lot of times that's how older guys can take advantage of younger females.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so that is another consequence or casualty of these type relationships where the parents either can't get along or there's no relationship whatsoever. You know, it's just
right.
Almost like the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love and hate are apathy, and that can be worse because there's no emotion whatsoever. There's nothing to gauge you or to go by.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about the sacred bond. And because that seems to be the capstone of what you're doing, it seems everything that you do seems to grow out of that. So tell us about that.
Right. And that's an interesting story, because when I came back to Columbus, when I returned to Columbus, again, my son, my oldest son, he was, he had his own house. He had his own, he had a great job. He had his own transportation and everything. He had all the American dream trinkets. And so when we came back, I came back in the 90s, and it was around the time when they had the Million Man March. And I took a chance and asked my sons if they would attend with me. Well, the youngest one said no, and the oldest one surprisingly said yeah. And so I was shocked. So I think I used that as a turning point in our relationship and our development, our growth. And so we attended the Million Man March together. And when I returned, one of the things that we were instructed to do was to go back and do something for the community. Mm-hmm. And I thought about it, and I knew that we, as people, black people, we have short memories. And I knew that 10 years, 20 years down the road, most people wouldn't know anything about the Million Man March. So I said, what better way to acknowledge that and commemorate that than to have a father and son celebration, not a banquet, a celebration where we celebrate fatherhood, black fatherhood. And so I started sponsoring an annual father and son celebration that men only, and it took a lot of flack from that, took a lot of flack over the years. Men only, no alcoholic beverages. The format was basically we had a youngster, we always have a young speaker, somebody like yourself, that would talk about their relationship with their father, whatever it is, good, bad, or indifferent. We invite them to do that. If they feel confident and capable of doing it, we let them do it. Then we have some entertainment, have an excellent meal. We have excellent meal because you know yourself, if the food ain't good, the brothers ain't coming back, and they're going to dog you. So we have excellent meal. Then we have a keynote speaker. We'll invite somebody in from our, that's out on the speaker circuit talking about black males. And we have a raffle for all the youngsters that's 12 and under. And so we have that after. So anyway, in working on this over the years, my sons were reluctant to help me. They didn't, I ain't helping that guy, whatever. And so over the years, my oldest son, he attended all the time, but he wasn't going to do a whole lot. So he attended, and then every once in a while he would come to a meeting or something like that. So then one day it dawned on him. I guess he started waking up, and he said, Dad, this is something that you've been doing, and I see you've been doing it all your life. Working with males, and I kind of can see what you're trying to accomplish. And so we started talking about how we had evolved, how our relationship had evolved. And so, we said, hey, this might be a story that we can go out and tell other people and share it with other people, give them some hope, because we need hope in the black community. Black males need some hope, And so he came up with this idea. He said, Dad, he said, it's like we're restoring a sacred bond that was broken when our ancestors were captured and brought over here. And so he came up with this, the sacred bond, and he came up with a definition that I thought was just right on the point. The sacred bond is the spiritual and emotional connection between father and son, symbolized by the divine Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. It is a covenant sanctioned by God to create and sustain humanity through sound moral judgment and responsible procreation. The sacred bond between father and son is the cornerstone of the family structure and will only manifest when a healthy relationship exists, one built upon love, trust, and mutual respect. When he came up with that, I said, there you go. That says it all. So out of that, we do presentations, and we talk about our story. He talks about it from the perspective of the son growing up without a father. I talk about it from the perspective of how I got myself in that situation and how I got out of that situation, with the lessons for other men to try to be able to take that under consideration. So that's how we came up with the sacred bond. We've done presentations in churches here. We've done them at community college. We've done some. We even went to Phoenix and did it at a family and father conference. So we do that. Then we do follow up with workshops. we came up with what we call a blueprint. And it's five components in that. And that we use those as titles for the workshop. The father and son dynamics, the child abandonment, feelings of rejection, the father and mother relations, and the gender differences. So we break it down and we follow up with those workshops. We have workbooks, and we work with young men to help them reconnect with their sons.
All right, now, how can people get more information about the Sacred Bond, the workshops, or even you train them? Because I'm a firm believer in sharing, and that's African is to be able
right.
to share and propagate the good things that you're doing. So how can people get more information about what you're doing?
Well, I am a senior citizen, okay, and I have not been able to put together our website. I've been working at it, you know, trying to get some young people to work with me to help me get it up. So we don't have a website as of yet, and we're working on that right now. The only contact I can give is that I can give my phone number, my office number, and my email address.
Okay, we'll give those.
My email address is it's an acronym, K.M. Mary T. Tom Institute, INSTITUTE at hotmail.com, KMT Institute at hotmail.com. And my number is area code 614-372-1104. Again, the number is area code 614-372-1104. That's my info, and we should be getting this webpage up in short time here.
Okay. You also are a co-host on a radio program, so tell us about that. I understand it's internet-based, very similar to what we're doing now. So tell us the URL for the station.
Okay.
And the times that it comes on. Is it live or is it on demand?
It's live.
Okay.
Okay. It's Talktainment. TalkTainment. Talktainment Radio. And the moniker is Women's Work. That's the title of the show, Women's Work. The co-hosts are two sisters, and they talk about women around the world. They talk about women's issues or whatever. And they asked me to come on and talk about single women raising male children one time. And when I came on and talked about it, they thought about it, and they said, you know, we might want to try to do something with this guy, you know. So they invited me back again, and we talked and talked, and they said, well, like, we might like to have you guest co-host with us to bring that male perspective. So I've been doing that for about 3 or 4 months, but I'm going to also move to get my own show, and it's going to be on that same channel, and it's going to be The Other Perspective, and I want to leave it open like that so I can talk about whatever, but it's going to primarily focus on African American males.
Okay, now what are the days and times of the program?
It's on Wednesdays at 3 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time.
Okay, all right. All right, now you have the Kemet Institute. And
mm-hmm.
you do mentoring, you have an after-school program, you do summer programs? Awesome.
Well, we have a fantastic summer program starting next Tuesday. Basically, it's the first thing. We have a nice park in the middle of the heart of our city, and it's centrally located. So we're going to do a 6 weeks summer program where the students, first thing in the morning, we take them to the park and exercise. So we're going to have some athletes that are in physically fit shape that's going to take them over there and give them a good workout for about an hour. And then their first class is going to be a class on self-mastery, which I will be teaching in all my years.
Wait a minute. Explain that, because that's part and parcel of a long tradition of African pedagogy, but we've lost that. So explain that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that was when all the things that I've seen over the years, and I see all these programs, the thing that's missing is, and the reason that we don't have a better impact and more success with our young boys is because they don't address that issue. If a boy doesn't know who he is, anything's going to work. See what I'm saying? He'll try anything, because that's what we do. We're just like sponges. We come here and we absorb everything. So if there's not any guidance and direction and self-discipline, then you get all kind of stuff. So to me, you have to teach them about who they are. And what we're doing, we're operating out of, I don't know if you're familiar with Naeem Akbar's work, Dr. Naeem Akbar,
right. Mm-hmm.
But what we're working out of is one of his books called The Community of Self.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so I'm teaching them about self. You know, like everybody has a conscience, everybody has drives, everybody has senses, everybody has a will, and everybody has an ego. And so I've broken those up into segments, and I teach that, and then have these youngsters do role play so they can actually see that behavior. So you can see ego. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You can set up a scenario where you can see, you can say, well, how did you get to that point? That was ego. So to me, once you get their attention, then I can slide in their history. See, they're going to be more receptive. They'll be more receptive to me talking about it. Because when you start talking about history, you know, that young people, a lot of them say, hey, that was then, this
right.
is now,
right.
you know, whatever.
Right.
So you're able to ease that in. And you have to be able to do it in a natural, normal way. It can't be something like you're trying to teach them this. You just got to be able to let it flow, you know. And so in dealing with those components of that book, I'm able to also talk about history because I'm an African history instructor. You know, I've done that all my life. I'm well read in it. I'm well versed in it. I have a tremendous library. I have DVDs, those kind of things. So that's the first piece they get. Then my son has an MBA and he has a degree in accounting. And what he's done is developed a methodology that will get the attention of these young boys to help them with math. Because I'm a firm believer, if we can get our boys to become good readers and to teach them math, they can survive. They can make it. But those are the things that get us messed up, because if you don't get math, you start acting up in school, you start playing, you know, whatever, you get in trouble, you know. And if you can't read, you're going to be embarrassed, you know, same thing's going to happen. So our theory was we teach them this, we tutor them with this, we focus on that. And so my son has developed a methodology centered around sports, and it's excellent. And so he does that. Then we have a retired fireman who has worked in the schools here a long time, and he's going to be doing tutoring. He's going to tutor these boys in reading. And on 2 days a week in the afternoon, we're going to show DVDs. And then we're going to have some elders there to help facilitate the discussion. And on Friday, it's going to be career day. And on that day, we're going to invite brothers from all job categories to come in and talk to these young people about all the different kinds of jobs that are available other than food service, teaching, you know, those kind of typical jobs that young people only see when they're out there.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to talk about what does it take to be a brick mason? What does it take to be a barber? What does it take to be an insurance man? What does it take to drive one of those big rigs out there working on the freeway? We want to expose these young boys to the fact that there's over 2,000 different job categories. You know what I'm saying? So we want them to see that. So that's what our summer program is. I'm excited about it and looking forward to it.
Okay. Now, during the year, you have an after-school program. And so what does that entail? Is that
We just focus solely on math and reading and African history.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Now, do you the set age group?
Yes, I'm focused on middle school because I think that in our society we just throw them away. They're the throwaway groups. Nobody wants to work with them. They need help. In every city in the United States, middle school boys are in desperate need of some assistance.
Right. Now, do you offer a sort of rites of passage? And the reason I'm just asking for information, one of the issues I have with rites of passage, they're excellent programs. They help develop the young person's consciousness and awareness of who they are and what they should do and be. But once they complete it, there's no reinforcement in the general community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm disappointed in the rites of passage here in Columbus because I was involved at the outset when they first developed the Simba program in California.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I was involved. I remember Juwanza Kajufu had flown into San Francisco, and I met with him and the brother that was the founder of the Simba program. We met several weeks, and we talked about it. I worked with Dr. Wade Nobles, who had a fantastic rites of passage program called the Hawk program. But when I came back to Columbus is an interesting town, and I'm sure you've probably heard some rumors about Columbus, but Columbus is an interesting city. And the people here tend to be very comfortable. I call them the happiest slaves on the plantation. And so what they did was there were some people, they're cliques, there are a lot of cliques. And so there was a clique with the university, and they wanted to take over the rites of passage. So what they did was they tried to come up with a program that anybody that wanted to do rites of passage had to go through their training in order for them to do it. Okay? And if you wasn't in their clique, then they wouldn't accept you for the training. And so then what they did was, to me, my understanding is you want a citywide rites of passage program. You want kids from all over the city to be able to do that. Well, you're not going to be able to do that if you couch the program in a church, because some brothers don't like to go to churches. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They don't, anything that's
right.
church affiliated, they ain't necessarily going to be feeling it. So what they did was it became like an elite club. And so now it's pretty much dissipating. We don't really have any rites of passage programs in Columbus.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, absent that, then the Kemet Institute is filling a major void then.
Yeah. We do again, but again you get a lot of flack because there are a lot of Negroes in Columbus, and anything that has to do with black, they try to distance themselves.
Yeah, they don't want to hear it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like I've had people tell me, well, you would get more brothers to come to the Father and Son celebration if you stopped saying it was involved with the Million Man March.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, you have to work, you have to do the best that you can in the situation that you find yourself, you know, and I think we're making some good headway. If you go back 17 years ago is when we started the Father and Son Celebration in the Kemetic Institute, black men were not getting no play.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So we feel proud that we were able to, you know, to stick with it because we certainly didn't get a whole lot of support. You know, we have a black mayor in Columbus, and he's been in office for 3 terms, and he's never attended the Father and Son Celebration. And I've invited him every year and sent him free tickets.
Yeah, well, I think at some point we're going to become mature about the political process and stop seeing them as saviors and just seeing them, to me, they're just black faces on white power.
And, that's right.
I mean, the ultimate example of that is the president. So
absolutely.
You know, I think maybe after his term is over and after people see what he's done to them, and I'm talking about black folks.
Right.
We'll be more mature because they just haven't made the connection and the leap and the arc between what we've seen from black mayors and what we've seen from, you know, other elected officials, even the President of the United States. So we have a lot of growing and a lot of maturing to do.
Absolutely, in that area, because, you know, again, my question always is if we look, if you just do the math, if there's 250 million people in the United States and 40 million of those are black people, what percentage is that of the electorate? And then of that, how many are children? How many of them are incarcerated? You know, so what are we talking about? You know, we don't have any clout. You know, if you look at the Asian community, if you look at the East Indian community, if you look at the African communities, they understand your dollars do the talking for you.
Right. See? Right.
That's what, you don't have to be out there marching and singing and whatever. Your dollars talk for you. What would happen in the United States of America today with a black president if all black people said, well, okay, we have a black president and it's 2 years tenures in office. We haven't really seen him do anything, come out really positive about anything for us. What we're going to do is we're going to boycott Christmas this year. I guarantee you would bring them to the table.
Yep.
You'd bring them to the table because you're hitting them in the pocketbook.
Right.
If you ain't hitting them in the pocketbook, they don't care about what you're talking about. You know, how many people know that one of the first acts that President Obama took when he came into office the first time was to establish AFRICOM? Are you familiar with AFRICOM?
Well, but the AFRICOM was in the works before he came. It's just
first.
But
they used a black ambassador to sell it.
Oh yeah, but I mean, to the Africans' credit, that when Bush was the president, they rejected it.
Yeah.
And because of certain things that happened on the ground, now they are being forced at gunpoint to accept it.
Right.
You know.
Right.
If we were more astute, we would be holding his feet to the fire for what he did in Cote d'Ivoire, Mali, Somalia, you name it.
Right.
Just Africa, but we're just not. So, I mean, that's a whole nother program. I don't even know.
Another program, right. We're talking in here about dealing with boys, our boys.
Yeah, but speaking of another program, I'd like to have you back as a recurring guest. To talk about what's going on, what are some of the issues? I mean, because it's more than a notion, and I know that. But a lot of people want to do things, but they just don't know how to do it. They might not have the patience because dealing with young folks, like you said, especially middle schoolers, that can take a lot out of you, and you have to know how to psych them and trick them and get them.
I tell people all the time, to work with young people, you got to be an entertainer.
Yeah.
You got to be able to entertain them because that's what you're competing in.
Yeah, and that's
everything they want to do is just be entertained.
Yeah, that's the trap that we've fallen into.
Right, yeah. Right. But I would love to do that, and when I get my show, you know, we could do the same thing because I believe that this is a blessing for us to have the opportunity to be able to have these shows on the online. Because we could take advantage of it. It's, you know, you know, James Brown said it before, open the door, we can get it ourselves. You know, I think we can make this a tremendous asset for our communities, you know, by finding out what's going on. I just came back from California, and I hooked up with a brother out there that has a show, and he and I are going to be doing that. You know, what's going on out there? What's, like, one of the examples, one of the things I used to tell people is the flow of information goes from east to west coast. If you live in the Midwest, you get the information last. See what I'm saying? So you guys get the information. If it's happening, y'all get it. We get it last. See what I'm saying? So what they're telling you up there, we might not get it for another month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what they're saying out in California, we might not get it for another week, 2 weeks,
right.
A month, a year. You see what I'm saying? So this helps us. This helps us because – you know, if you ask me what's going on in the public schools here, I guarantee you it's almost the same thing going on in the public schools there.
Oh, no question.
See what I'm saying? So we're getting inside information, like that whole bit about the schools in Atlanta threatening to put those people in jail for fudging the numbers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, we got the same situation here in Columbus.
Yep, it's all over. It's all
what I'm saying. You know, so they, you know, we ain't, but one of the things that I saw in California when I was out there, they had the first, they held the first statewide conference on police brutality. Now, have you heard of that? Have you heard about it?
No. Nah.
See what I'm saying? We ain't gonna hear about it. But they had it. You know what I'm saying? They had it, and they had top people in there speaking about it. They had a judge that was in there talking about what they needed to do. You know, I used to work for the city, and, you know, one of the things they always do is blow you off when they have those investigatory things. They always let the police investigate themselves. How are you going to do that?
Well, you have somebody.
You got to have an outside independent somebody.
Right, right.
You know, and so they keep running that on us over and over and over. So this guy, this is a judge, and he's sitting there saying what they need to have. You know, and then they had a guy from the Mexican community. He talked and whatever, you know, because they point out to people to get killed. Again, one of the things that I think that would be good, and I challenge some young people this all the time, if you just make contact with people in different cities, ask them to keep track of the number of black males that get killed in a week. It would be astounding for people to see that number.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because every little city somewhere, they're killing a brother.
Yep. Yep.
You know, and so to me, if we don't make it a sense of urgency and a sense of emergency, don't nobody else care.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Well, give your contact information, give your email address and your phone numbers again.
Okay.
And,
okay. Kitten M Mary T Tom Institute, INSTITUTE at hotmail.com. The phone number is 614-372-1104.
Okay. When is your annual?
October the 19th will be our 17th annual Father and Son celebration.
Okay. And lastly, give us the time. So the radio program, are you, do you come on every week or is it?
Yes. Okay. Every week, every Wednesday at 3 o'clock on Talktainment Radio.
Okay. All right, brother. It's a pleasure.
Okay, man. Good talking to you, man. Look forward to meeting you when I come up to visit Tom.
Okay, I was about to say, when you talk to Tom, tell him we hooked up and everything was great. And
I shot in your email.
Okay, all right.
Okay, good, brother.
Okay, man. Stay strong.
Have a great day.
All right, you too. And we thank our guest, Richard Lundy, from the Kemet Institute of Columbus, Ohio, for taking time from his busy schedule to share his work, his passion, and the importance of fathers reconnecting and being a part of their children's lives. They're coming up on their 17th annual Father and Son celebration later this year. And again, his phone number is area code 614-372-1104. And as always, this is Junius Ricardo Stanton reminding you, free your mind. The rest will follow. Engage in mental decolonization. Till next time, stay strong.
Cyberspace is the place that no army with artillery can invade.
You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow.
That no corporation incorporates, no denomination face dominates, and no court is going to try anything.